Today I'd like to continue somewhat in the same vein as we've been going in the past few messages, but this time with a deeper look into the creation all around us. Whether you take the Bible literally and believe it is complete and the end of the message God had to give to human beings, which would include the creation of the earth in 6 days, approximately 6,000 years ago, as well as the unexplained time sequence of the dinosaurs, and the existence of man with a beginning at approximately the same time as the start of the Jewish calendar. Or whether you have questions about archaeological digs, such as Göbekli Tepe in the Anatolia region of Turkey. You have a free will, which gives you a personal choice to believe and be led by the Spirit of God working in your life and in my life. The earth very well may have been created in 6 literal 24-hour days. It may very well have happened 6,000 years ago. There's no reason to try and disprove what anyone believes and has proven to themselves to be the basis of their faith. As we have said many times, that is entirely between each individual and their Creator God. Several decades ago, we watched a movie in church. A family was enjoying a picnic together in the beautiful sunshine of summer. The photographer started at the picnic table and drilled down and down and down into the smallest particle, which at that time was the atom. It was like a spring being tightly wound until there was nothing but one single atom. Then the spring started to unwind, and we were taken far out into the universe, beyond our solar system, beyond our galaxy, further and further until we reached the very edge of the universe. It was a very effective film, and I've thought about it many times during these intervening years. When we read the creation story, it's all very nicely packaged, all tightly woven together. We can understand and see the majesty and glory of the creation. But did it just happen in the blink of an eye? Maybe it did. We don't know. But it seems that something as magnificent as we see all around us would have been talked about, planned for, and built to function without a hitch, long before the lights were turned on. So my question today is, could a solitary being have snapped his fingers, and there it was, in all its complexity, its perfection, and its science? Because when you look closely, this is the very epitome of science. The definition of science, according to Webster's dictionary, is having knowledge. To me, that is a woefully insufficient explanation of what science really is. It goes on to say, knowledge covering general truths, or the operation of general laws, especially as obtained and tested through the scientific method. Does everybody here know what the scientific method is? That hardly tells me what science is. In any case, without science, there could be no orderly universe. God is in science because it is one of God's great works of creation. As I talk to people with differing beliefs and understandings of Scripture, I find that generally they have a very limited use for, and indeed a disdain for, science. They say God is in charge, which I believe as well. However, their trust and belief in God is as far as they go. They have no need to think any more deeply. Maybe it's just my natural inclination, but I'm curious. I want to know why and how things work the way they do. At the moment, I'm reading a very interesting book as well. It's titled The Heavens and Their Story, written nearly a century ago by Annie S.D. Maunder and her husband E. Walter Maunder. They are both honorary fellows of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. Walter died in 1928, but Annie lived until 1947. They married while at university together in 1895 and spent their whole lives studying and documenting the dark spots on the sun, or sunspots as we know them today. Their main focus was the sun and how it affects Earth's climate. As I've been studying this, I'm fascinated by the powerful influence the sun exerts on the Earth and every living thing on it, from climate to health to the inner workings of the gravitational pull on our orbit, as well as the geomagnetic poles. Practically everything depends on a strong magnetic connection. If the name Maunder sounds familiar to you, you may have heard of sun cycles and the periods known as Maunder minimums. These were particular periods in Earth's history when sunspot activity became so scarce that it was practically non-existent. And it was during these times that the Earth experienced mini ice ages. The events that the Maunder studied into was the solar minimum, which lasted from 1645 to 1715 of the Common Era. And you may be familiar with the Great Freeze of London in 1859, when for the first time in memory, the River Thames froze solid and there was no summer. The Maunders were the first to discover that the sun operates in cycles, which have been mapped into 11-year sunspot cycles and 22-year magnetic solar cycles. Astronomers of the Maunders period were divided as to whether there actually was a drop in sunspot activity or whether it had just not been accurately documented. In the end, with the help of carbon-14 dating, tree rings proved two distinct periods of low sunspot activity and colder than normal conditions around the world. The name Maunder minimum was given to reduce sunspot activity and was already in use by an American astronomer named John Allen Eddy in 1976, when he found another mini ice age between 1450 and 1540 of the Common Era. That one he named the Sporer minimum, after a German scientist, Gustav Sporer, who had earlier studied these same sunspot anomalies. Excuse me. What I find so fascinating is how the slightest fluctuation on the sun has such a drastic effect on everything on Earth. How innocent it sounds when we read in Genesis 1:16, God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. We are well aware of all that is not said but is covered in that verse. The sun is our very life, Without the light and warmth, where and what would we be? Throughout their book, the Maunders quote heavily from the Bible, and there are many beautiful, intricate graphs, drawings, panels, and plates depicting the sky and the marvel that it holds. But there is a disclaimer. This is not a textbook, nor a novel, but an attempt to suggest rather than describe the vastness and mystery of that great starry system. The book opens with Psalms 19, verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. It continues with a quote from Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice. Look how the floor of heaven is thick inlaid with patines of bright gold. There's not the smallest orb which thou beholdest, but in his motion, like an angel sings, still choiring to the young-eyed cherubims. Such harmony is in immortal souls, but while this muddy vesture of decay doth grossly close it in, we cannot hear it. But David knew differently in Psalms 19, verse 3. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. And as I said last time, there's an unexplored history awaiting if you just gaze up at the night sky. Is ours the only sun? No, there are others. Are the planets in our solar system the only ones? No. There are other solar systems and planets. How many galaxies are there besides the Milky Way? We have no idea, really. In Job 38, verse 19. What is the way to the abode of light? And where does darkness reside? As human beings, we're not privy to the full extent of what comprises the creation, or why there seem to be numerous duplications. Quite often, humans see themselves as quite knowledgeable. But really, how much do we not know? I would think it's quite a bit much more than we do know. Whether all this happened on the very first day of creation, 6,000 years ago, or whether it's still a work in progress, is neither here nor there. What we cannot deny when we look around us is that there is a supreme creator God. Many of you may remember working your way through the correspondence course in the old Worldwide Church of God. I reached lesson 72 before they were discontinued, and I was pronounced a graduate. One thing I remember very clearly was learning and proving to myself that God exists. Looking back, the actual explanations of the proofs don't seem very detailed now, but there's no denying the truth of what they do say. Proof number one, creation demands a creator. Nobody can deny that nothing just happens out of thin air. Everything that operates as smoothly as does the earth, the solar system, the galaxy, and the universe, all working flawlessly in unison throughout the ages, could not have just happened. Some greater power had to have been behind such precision. Proof two, life demands a life giver. When we get past the workings of the earth and the universe, we come down to the human beings who inhabit the earth. No matter how scientists have tried, they have not yet managed to create life. This refers not only to humans, but also to plants and animals. Nothing has been brought to life from absolutely nothing, not even the dust of the ground. Scientists are not life givers. They are only students of what is already living or dead. Proof three, law demands a lawgiver. Long before any of the systems that we have looked at so far came into existence, there had to have been some planning so that everything would work perfectly. Laws had to have been put into place. Very complex laws which would guarantee that there could be no failure. Every function of every single thing, from the most elaborate center of our solar system, the sun, right down to every single atomic particle in every cell of our bodies, had to be predetermined and set in place to mesh seamlessly with every other functioning element to hold everything together for as long as the one who created it decreed. Proof number four, design demands a designer. Behind the laws and the life, there had to be a designer. The planning and preparing for the creation had to be carefully designed according to a divine plan. Some power far greater than anything we can imagine had to have foreseen everything that we know and see around us. Whether above, on our level, or below. Long before it was ever brought into reality, there could be no flaws in the design. Otherwise, we would not be here today. Before the start button was pushed, everything had passed the test and the cornerstone was laid. The design was flawless. These four proofs are sufficient for the subject of this message. Let's read in Job 38, beginning in verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm. He said, "Who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me, if you understand. Who marked off the dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone?" And in verse 7, "While the morning stars sang together, and all the angels shouted for joy." This is part of the answer to the sermon title. Job wasn't around. We surely weren't. But the morning stars and all the angels were, and they celebrated the creation with singing and shouting. Note that this happened before Satan and the fall. All the angels were there. No matter how deep down we go or how far out into the vastness of space, everything is running precisely and smoothly without a hiccup. Like the workings of a very fine Swiss watch, every cog and every wheel must be in exactly the right place at the right time for the seconds, minutes, and hours to be measured as accurately as is humanly possible. All based on a divine design. So it is with our solar system and our galaxy. It is so finely tuned that every single element is synchronized to a divine blueprint where things have kept right on spinning and functioning according to from whenever it was the foundation of the world. We have no idea when it all started. We have no idea who took part in the design and planning. But usually, it does take two, at least, to stretch out a measuring line. Nor do we know who was watching to make sure that everything worked properly that very first time. We also are told that nobody but the Creator knows when and if it will all end. We talk about the end of the world, but is that the end of civilization as we know it, or the end of creation? If we're willing to listen to what the archaeologists have found, it would seem that when we look at the 6,000 years as Earth's history, we're only looking at a very, very small slice of time. Heavily influenced by our knowledge of the Jewish calendar, which, as I said earlier, is approximately 6,000 years old. Please bear with me now. I'm going to introduce some very dry scientific material. Yes, the Earth is 6,000 years old, but consider this. Geologically, time has been divided into eons, eras, periods, epochs, ages, and chrones. Eons are the largest geochronologic units, and there are four of them. Hadean, Archean, Proterozoic, and Phanerozoic. Next largest are the eras, divided into 10 chronostratigraphic erathems. You're probably familiar with some of them. Eoarchean, Paleoarchean, Mesoarchean, Neoarchean, Paleoproterozoic, Mesoproterozoic, Neoproterozoic, Paleozoic, Mesozoic, and Cenozoic. There are none from the Hadean Aeon. A period is equivalent to a chronostratigraphic system. There are 22 defined periods, with the current being the quaternary period. Quite recently, it was decided to give this period a subname, Anthropocene, which means the human age. However, a panel of experts has voted down the motion to change the name officially. An exception to the period system is that two sub-periods are used for the Carboniferous period. An epoch is the second smallest geochronological unit. It is the equivalent of a chronographic series. There are 37 defined epochs, as well as one informal one. There are 11 sub-epochs, which are all within the neogene and quaternary periods. Sub-epochs are formal units which were ratified as recently as 2022, 2 years ago. The age is the smallest hierarchical geochronologic unit and is equivalent to a chronostratigraphic stage. There are 96 formal and 5 informal ages. A chrone is a non-hierarchical, formal geochronology unit of unspecified rank. They correlate with and are based on previously defined stratigraphic units of geological features. Early and late subdivisions are used as equivalents to lower and upper. If you've ever seen an archaeological dig, you'll know that the layers are different colors and sometimes different materials. Well, when they say early and late, they're talking about the lowest level as the early and the highest level as the late. Early periods describe the lowest level in a series. Thank you for staying with me through that. The point is that each of these units has been assigned a time span. And only the final two, sub-epochs and ages, fit into the span of thousands up to millions of years. So within the last million years, there have only been the sub-epochs and the ages. Only the Phanerozoic Aeon has been chosen to reflect major changes in the history of life on Earth. Paleozoic, old life, Mesozoic, middle life, and Cenozoic, new life. Through it all, we can't leave science out of religion, since we've learned that science is knowledge. God is the author of knowledge. Just one further scientific thought. Is anyone here familiar with the history known as Heinrich events or Carrington events? When I mentioned the great freeze of the River Thames in 1859, that was caused by the greatest Carrington event ever recorded. Carrington events are caused by massive solar flares and coronal mass ejections of magnetized plasma from the sun, which bombards the Earth if the flare is aimed in our direction. There are lots of flares going on the sun constantly. Thankfully, very few of them are aimed at Earth. The event sparked a huge geomagnetic storm, which disrupted technology, telegraph at that time, around the world, and the aurora borealis was visible as far south as the equator, and the aurora australis was visible as far north as Santiago, Chile. Heinrich events, on the other hand, happens when great slabs of Arctic ice break away and flow into the North Atlantic Ocean. Contrary to popular belief, this does not raise sea level, but it does affect the salination of the water. Isn't that interesting? Even the salt in the ocean is measured. There have been at least 6 recorded Heinrich events in the last glacial age of Earth. Scientists have recorded Heinrich and Carrington events happening on a schedule of major events every 12,000 years or so, and lesser events every 6,000 years, with minor events every half cycle, or every 3,000 years. Do you see where I'm going with this? The last cycle, approximately 6,000 years ago, has been named the Noah event, also known as the China event. These cycles have been documented going back several tens of thousands of years with different names. It seems that each cycle has seen the extinction of several species of animals, and many humans have been lost in these events, but their record remains, and always some animals and some humans have survived to carry on, just as did Noah and his family in the Bible that we use. People who believe in the 6,000 years theory are not wrong. Our cycle on this earth has been approximately 6,000 years since it was made new. The good news is that never in any of these events has all life been wiped out. Some scientists have termed these events the slow heartbeat of the universe. Science is not our enemy. It's actually another way to look at the workings of the great creator. Everything runs with precision and perfection, following laws laid down in the far mists of the past, as we human beings measure time. We cannot understand more than we have been given access to, and the sometimes fantastical information in the oral legends of our forebears, which are there for us to heed. We can be assured that we have been given what we need to live out our appointed time in history. Science can help us see that an eternal creator planned, designed, executed, and controls every proton and every electron spinning around the nucleus of every subatomic particle in existence. We are admonished in 1 Thessalonians 5:19-21 from the Message Bible. Don't suppress the Spirit, and don't stifle those who have a word from the Master. On the other hand, don't be gullible. Check out everything, and keep only what's good. Throw out anything tainted with evil. And let's end with John 1, verses 1 and 2, when science was created. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning.